3, 2, 1.
You are now listening to the Shalana Folks Talk Show, where I share stories of women who have overcome opposition and evolved into amazing entrepreneurs and powerful leaders. As a former event planner of 10 years, I am now infusing events with my exciting energy as an MC and host. Motherhood also compelled me to build a home-based business. I am the founder and owner of HBCU Legacy Fashion, a kids' boutique that builds awareness around HBCUs while giving back through scholarships. You can learn more at HBCULegacyFashion.com. Now that we're acquainted, let's get into the show. 3, 2, 1. Here we go! My guest today is here to talk about how to monetize your talent to live a life you love. Michelle Taylor Willis is the founder of Gagnet Media and MTW Enterprises. She is married with 4 sons and lives in Atlanta, Georgia. A Florida native and graduate of the University of Florida, Michelle is an award-winning entrepreneur, publisher, speaker, and master strategist. She has been recognized as top 25 most powerful women in Atlanta, the top 25 most extraordinary Atlantans, and has made several top 100 lists in Atlanta, Georgia. In addition, she has received countless outstanding Business Person of the Year by different organizations. Her publication, South Fulton Lifestyle, was awarded Publication of the Year 3 times in a row. Michelle happens to also be my soror, so ski-wee! I am so excited to have her here today. Help me welcome Michelle Taylor Willis. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
So what I like to do is take my audience through a journey. So I want to know what 8-year-old Michelle wanted to be when she was an adult.
That's hilarious. So 8-year-old Michelle wanted to be a performer.
Okay.
And not sure what kind of performer at that time, but I knew I was going to be performing. When I was 8, I was a gymnast. I was a gymnast and then competitively all the way up until I was about 16 or so. So there was a minute there I thought I'd be performing at the Olympics, you know, as a gymnast. Oh, wow. You know, but I always knew I was gonna be a performer. I have, like, can I tell you a funny story about me being 8? So when I was in, probably about middle school, like 6th grade or so. What is that? Like, what are you, 10, 11? 11? Yeah, I remember, you might not remember this, but we used to have tape recorders that were about, like, you know, about like this long.
Yeah.
And they had the buttons you press, and you have to press play and record at the same time to record. Have you seen that before? Okay. And so
I think I'm younger than what I really am.
Yeah, because I'm like, she looks like she's like 10. But and so what I had one of those, which I loved, and I would pretend I was the show host. So it's interesting now because you know what I do. Mm-hmm. But I was the host of the show and I was also the guest. So I was like Oprah and Whitney Houston, you know. Ooh. So and so I had all these tapes and it's crazy. I wish that I still had those, or I knew where those tapes were, so I could go back and listen to them, because I remember, you know, but I would like press record and I'd be like, today on the, I don't remember what the show name was, but I'd be like, it's Whitney Houston. And then I'd come out and I'd be like, I believe the children are future, you know, and then I'll do the whole thing and the audience was like, yeah, like I had my whole, like I had a one-man show.
That's funny because my brother and I did the same thing for his birthday one year. He got a camcorder, and in our living room, that was like our TV show. And I had a talk show in the living room and he would record me, but who knows where that's at? That was like 90s. So there's no telling.
I know, but don't you wish you could go back and find it just to hear, like, I would give anything for those videotapes.
No, and then the whole acting thing. I used to act in front of the mirror, and then we had like our own show called The Restaurant in our kitchen. So we would pretend like we were at a restaurant.
Hilarious.
And we would record that. That's funny.
I love it.
Okay, so gymnast, you thought you'd be a gymnast. Gymnast, when did that change and when did you become an entrepreneur?
So that the gymnast dream kind of died when I had an injury. I was about 15 or 16. I was a competitive gymnast at the time. And by competitive, I meant like that was my job outside of school. I went to school and then I was at gym training and that was it. And so there was no life outside of that, right? And so I had an injury at school. I fell on my tailbone and I injured my tailbone. And so I had to go and, you know, get x-rays and all this stuff. And it took me out of gymnastics for like 6, 8 weeks. And while I was out of gymnastics, I was like, oh my gosh, there's a whole nother world out here. And so that's kind of, I mean, you know, as I reflect on it, I realize like that's kind of when I decided I don't think I want this to be my life. You know what I mean? I want to be a cheerleader. I want to run track. I want to go to parties. I want to hang out with my friends. And I didn't really get a chance to do a lot of that stuff as a gymnast. And so that's when I pivoted from like not performing there. Like I still don't be performing. And I always knew I was going to be in business. Right, because it's in my DNA. Everybody in my family has owned their own businesses. Some of them have been great, some not so much, but it is a DNA trait on both sides of my family. So that is something that was always going to be there. Whatever I was going to do, even as a performer, I was going to own it. So yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So then, what did you study? Because I know you went to University of Florida, correct?
I did, which is right now ranked the number six school in public universities in the nation.
Oh,
Shout out to the University of Florida Gators. I just had to, you know,
that's
Gator
amazing.
Nation.
So, what did you study there?
I was in advertising. I have a BS in advertising and an outside concentration in business.
Okay, so once you left the University of Florida, did you actually work in that field?
No. I thought I was going to go into advertising until I realized like they weren't trying to pay me any kind of money. It was like, you know, you can get an internship, which was like no pay, or you could come in as like a basic associate or like something like low level. And it was like $18,000 a year, $21,000 a year. And I was going to have to move to like Chicago or New York because I was in Florida, right? And I was in Gainesville at UF. And I was from Jacksonville. And so, you know, if you want a career in advertising, you know, I needed to go to one of the big markets. So I'm like, I didn't know anybody there. I didn't. So I was like, this isn't going to work. So I pivoted to sales. And from there, it was just, you know, I mean, I have sold everything in the book, indirectly or directly.
What are some of the things
But
you sold?
oh my gosh, I sold plumbing. My first job out of school was as a plumbing salesperson. I worked for Ferguson Enterprises, which was at the time, I believe, I know the nation's, the I might be the world's, but I think it's, I know it's the nation's largest plumbing wholesaler. And so I started with them, and it's crazy because, you know, obviously I'm a Black woman, and there weren't Black women going into their program. They had like this program where you graduate from college and you go and you learn all the different parts about plumbing, like inside sales, outside sales. And there weren't a lot of women doing it, one, but there were like no Black women. So far and few between that they basically like, I was like their, you know, they're like not test case, but you know, like their poster child. And I was in their recruiting brochures. I mean, I still have it. I was in their recruiting brochures that they would use at colleges to say like why you want to come work with us. It's crazy, you know. But I sold, yeah, I mean, plumbing all the way down to like the copper pipes. Like if you go look under your toilet and look at the P trap, I sold that stuff.
I've never looked under my toilet to see any of them.
Well, yeah, you will now. And you'll be like, oh, dang, Michelle knows all about that. Yeah, that was me. I mean, I actually sold the toilets. I used to get on the cherry picker. Do you know what the cherry picker is?
No.
A cherry picker is one of those machines that you get on and it raises you all the
Oh,
way
okay, yeah,
up. And
I know
then you
about that.
go, yeah. So I used to get on the cherry pickers and go and like use those machines to get toilets all the way off the top,
Ooh.
you know, shelves of the warehouse, like crazy stuff. Yeah. I did that. I sold internet. I sold fiber, black fiber, you know, because I was in tech sales. before the technology bubble burst back in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. I sold drugs legally. You're like, wait a minute, Michelle. Yeah, no, legal drugs, which was like my dream job at the time. Pharmaceutical sales, device sales. I sold glucometers. So I moved from pharmaceutical sales to, you know, entry level device sales. I sold insurance before I even went to college. I actually sold insurance in an insurance agency. My boyfriend at the time, his mom owned an agency, and like I did all the cold calling, you know, that's where I learned how to cold call. And so I cold called to get people to set up appointments with the agent for like, home insurance and car insurance and life insurance. And I would every like 2 days a week, I'd come into the office and I'd sell from like 7 to 9. I'd just get on the phone, you know, like, and now I built those training centers and stuff now, but yeah, girl, I mean, so insurance, and then for myself, you know, like I had an online bakery. So I sold, you know, bakery stuff, cupcakes, I baked from scratch, and that was a business. And I mean, girl, I sold like all kinds of stuff.
But you know, it's interesting what I've learned, like just in my life, all of the jobs that I've had and everything that I've done has prepared me to be an entrepreneur. You know, it's also in my DNA, like my grandfather, father, you know, his brothers and sisters, it was just in my DNA. But when I think about, and I actually scheduled a post for later on this week where I'm talking about how I became an entrepreneur. So that's funny. But when I think about how like I used to work at the guest store when I was in grad school, and you know, I'm folding jeans and doing all this, and now I started a clothing line, so for, you know, HBCU kids clothing line. And so like all these little things that I used to do, I was in grad school for elementary education, and I had to like make sure I planned out everything and organized everything very well, like my lesson plans. And then my first business was wedding planning, and so that kind of like came in handy as well. So it's really interesting that you say like how you learned how to cold call from those jobs. Mm-hmm. And kind of like built your businesses based off of like skills that you learned in your other jobs.
Absolutely. And let me say this, I said when I work with entrepreneurs, you know, and I speak to groups, I tell people, don't sleep on corporate America. Corporate America is great training ground for entrepreneurialism. And even down to like, you know, it's funny. I just redid the org chart for for my media company. Right. And as I was doing this chart, every time I do an organizational chart, I think the same thing. I wouldn't even know how to do that or what that was if I hadn't been in corporate America. Right. I think about training, you know, I've built training programs for companies, but I base it off of what the training program that I was, you know, taught and under when I worked for Johnson & Johnson, you know, proformas and budgets. I mean, I know all of that stuff because it rolled down to me when I was working for Fortune 500, Fortune 200 companies. Yeah. So, you know, I tell people, know what you want to do and what you want to focus in, but use corporate America as a training ground. Get a job somewhere that will allow you to grow and develop in your passion. Mm-hmm. But learn about all the different things, like work in the marketing department, work in the finance department, work in the sales department, so that you can and learn all that. So you can take all of those nuggets and know how to apply it. Because the fundamentals are the same. It doesn't matter if you're making $100,000 a year in business or if you're making $100 million. The fundamentals don't change. And businesses, small businesses, don't grow and don't do well because we don't have knowledge. And then we don't apply the knowledge of the fundamentals. That's what kills us. The detail the details really are what kill us. The devil really is in the details.
Yeah. So now you're in Atlanta. How long have you been there?
I've been in Atlanta for 15, almost 16 years. Wow.
So from Florida to Atlanta, how did you get to Atlanta?
I met this guy who wanted to marry me.
And then you guys have four boys.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So before I met that guy who wanted to marry me, I'd met another guy who wanted to marry me, and I married him too. So I married him first. And that didn't work out, although he's a great guy. And so then I got divorced, but I had my first son from him. So I have a 22-year-old,
Okay.
and he's from my first husband. And then, some years later, I met somebody else, the other guy that wanted to marry me, and he was living in Atlanta. And I was like, Atlanta seems dope, I guess. I can go to Atlanta. And so we got married and, I moved to Atlanta.
Well, it looks like Atlanta worked out because when I was reading your bio, I was like, oh my gosh, she's all of these great things that happen in Atlanta. Can you tell me about like you're on the board of directors for like all these different things and you help plant a church?
I did. Yeah, I
Tell
was
me about
too.
all of the accolades that happen here in Atlanta.
I find it, I mean, yeah, I've had some really good success. I really have. And I'm very thankful for the people who recognize me. It's interesting because when I first did move to Atlanta, I didn't quite like it. And I wasn't fascinated by it at all. And I wanted to go back to Florida. And so I had to settle in. Atlanta was to me, it was a big city. It wasn't a New York or Chicago, or an LA, but there were so many. I could drive from one side of Orlando to the next in like, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes or something. I mean, Atlanta, from central part Atlanta to just like the airport takes 35 minutes by itself. To go from one side of metropolitan Atlanta to the other side of metropolitan Atlanta could be without traffic is like an hour and a half, right? If somebody who lives all the way down south is like, I got to go all the way up north, I'm like, oh, that's awful. So I was very, put off by that. And then the traffic, this is 16 years ago and the traffic was crazy. Can you imagine what it is now? It is no fun. Like, thank you, COVID, for getting everybody off the road, right? So that was weird. And then honestly, it was a culture shock. I grew up around where I was the minority most of my life. I was the only Black kid in my advanced classes, my honors classes. I was the only Black kid in my AP classes, save maybe one or two here or there. I was the only Black girl on the cheerleading squad. I was the only Black girl in gymnastics. We lived in the suburbs and we were the only Black family. You know what I mean? So when I came to Atlanta and I was like, oh, there's Black people everywhere. So I was, I mean, I was like, trying to figure all of that out, and then I didn't know where to go, and I moved as a sales rep, and I was overwhelmed. But I tell you, when I really got ingrained in Atlanta is when I ventured out and kind of did this entrepreneurship thing. And once I branched out into entrepreneurship, it's like the waters just parted, and I created a name for myself in the medical practice management community with the business that I had there with a couple partners. And then it really broke out in publishing when I bought that, when my partner and I bought the magazine that I have now, almost 6 years ago. He said, this magazine is going to put your name on the map. And this magazine is how you're going to become a household name all over the nation. And I was like, look, can we just make some money? Like, let's just do that. Let's just keep it easy. And 6 years later, I mean, I'm not a household name everywhere in the nation, but I'm getting there. I'm
Yeah,
working on
you were just
it.
on the Tamron Hall show.
I was, yeah, I was.
Okay, now tell me more about the media and how you got into creating your own show and the magazine.
Yeah, so we bought the magazine, and when I bought the magazine, excuse me, when we bought the magazine, it was 1 month old. So we didn't found it, but we say we co-founded it, right? Because it had been in print for 1 month, but we took it and took it from there. But although I have to say, the hardest part about a magazine is getting it launched.
What's
Like
the
launch,
name of the magazine?
it's called So Food Lifestyle.
Soul Food Lifestyle. Okay.
So Food Lifestyle. It was previously South Fulton Lifestyle. I just changed the name to SoFu Lifestyle because SoFu is a term that I created for all eight cities in this area of South Atlanta.
Okay.
And so I wanted to make it cool and hip. So I did like SoFu, like South Fulton, kind of like Soho in New York,
Yeah.
right? So we've been on this journey for several years. So I decided to change the name from South Fulton Lifestyle to SoFu Lifestyle, as we've really kind of built into this brand. But the brand is trademarked and, you know, the market's marked and all that good stuff. So so in the publication, speaking of accolades, we just got 3 years in a row publication of the year. So we're very excited about that. The publication has done really well. And it's not, you know, it's a small magazine. It's not, you know, I mean, and this is our February issue.
Oh, nice.
So it's not like it's a huge major magazine, but it really has done a lot to re-energize an area of Atlanta that had kind of been lost for a minute. So I bought the magazine, we bought the magazine, and then my business partner and I, at the time, I bought him out of the magazine because he was going to start other magazines. And then the other things have just kind of happened. So I was just having a conversation. I was leading a Clubhouse room, moderating Clubhouse room just a few, right before I came on here with you.
Okay.
And I was talking about manifesting destiny. And one of the things I used to tell myself is that, can I call you Shay?
Oh, and most people do.
Oh, they do. Well, I got to think of another nickname for you.
Well, so people who knew me like before college called me Lena, like family and friends.
Yeah.
Because my sister's name is Shadell. And so she's 10 years older and they call her Shay. But everyone else that meets me, like, they call me Shay.
Okay. How about if I call you Lane?
Lena, not like Lane.
You don't like Lane? Oh, like, don't say that. My line sister's name is Lane. My line sister's name is Lane. So Lane is Lena. Okay, I'll call you Lena. Okay, Lena. So what happened is I used to tell myself, Lena, that I owned a media company. And this is just what my media company was, just a publishing company, because I created a publishing company to publish the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And but I started telling myself maybe a year or so into it that I owned a media company. And I think it's because I did have a vision to do some other things in media. I did not know what it meant, but I just started saying it. And I knew that I wanted to have this Oprah effect. And so I started saying, I'm the next Oprah, right? I'm the next Oprah. I'm like Oprah, and I own a media company. And it's crazy because now 6 years later, I own a media company. And the way that that happened is I started with the end in mind. So I knew media company was where I needed to land. And then the God and the universe just all started working together in my favor with my mind, my actions, God's plan and direction. So about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, a friend of mine was like, listen, you know, I think it'd be a good idea for you to wrap billboards into your advertising stuff. You can, you know, sell billboards, you know, and you can get some great rates and you could just buy, you know, slots on billboards and blah, 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 and sell them to your customers. And that way you can give them billboards in addition to magazines. So I was like, oh, that's a great idea. So I started doing that. Boom, took off. Billboard is always sold out. My slot on the billboard anyway. Then, a few months after that, I was invited to be a guest on a radio show here. And a friend of mine knew the station owner and I think had put a bug in his ear already, like, you need to have your own show here, but just go on and be interviewed. And when I finished the interview, the owner of the station was like, you need to have your own show. And then 2 weeks later, I had the According to Michelle radio show. And all through this time, I was kind of working on this video concept of me interviewing like local business owners. And so I worked with this production guy for a while and we did a couple things. And there's a couple things out there like on YouTube and stuff, you can see them. But it never really landed. But then my hairdresser, so relationships are crazy.
Yeah.
My hairdresser was like, listen, I know this producer and she worked with Steve Harvey and a couple other big Black comedians and people that she's helped take from radio to TV, and y'all need to meet. So I met with her and she was like, listen, I don't know what I'm going to do with you, but I'm going to do something with you. Just kind of hang tight. A year, and we stay in contact. She's telling me things to do to prepare me for my journey into TV. Like, make sure, you know, when you're on radio, do this and, you know, set up people you want to interview on camera. And so we started just doing like these little things. And then she went to this local network here in Atlanta and she called me. She said, this is my first day. I'm going to pitch your show. And I'm like, what show? And she's like, your radio show. And I'm like, it's not a TV show. She's like, exactly. And she's like, I'll call you back on Wednesday. And she called me back on Wednesday and she said, they want to do a show with you. Wow. And that's how the TV show happened. This is in the middle of quarantine.
Oh, wow.
In like May.
Wow.
So when the world is falling apart, my world is just coming together.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, he's out of control. And so that's how I got the TV show. And it was, and it was fueled by advertising. So understand, my media company is an advertising vehicle. What we do is provide small businesses the opportunity to advertise. Right. The problem with small businesses is they don't have the money or they're not budgeted for it. They don't know where to advertise, how to advertise, when, why, what. Mm-hmm. We solve that problem because we create our own content. We own our own content. We own most of the medium. So that means I control the cost.
Right.
So where you don't have money to advertise with Cox Cable, you can advertise with Ganyo Media because I'm going to get you on cable TV and I'm also going to throw you up on YouTube. Right. But you can afford a $30,000, you know, TV pass, but you might be able to afford six. And that's where we come in.
That's cool. And, now, yeah. I do want to talk about the Moms All In conference that I see. Tell me about that and how you got started with it.
Yeah, that is always back there. Yeah, because we're in the throes of Moms All In, the speaker series. So thanks for asking. Did I answer your last question, by the way? Was that what you were looking for?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Lena. Not Lane. Okay. So the Moms All In conference is a brand that I created to help entrepreneurial women, specifically mothers, build a business and build their lives. So what I found looking for conferences is that I saw women who, I saw conferences that have a professional focus. You've seen those, right? Like build your business, brand yourself, you know, learn how to business plan, right?
Right.
And then you've probably seen conferences where it's like, focus on mental health, focus on your physical health. Here's a spirituality conference. Here's a yoga conference, right? All these. And then you probably see the parenting conferences, right? Right. How to help your kids, how to, but there wasn't something that was total. And so the Moms All In conference is a total woman conference, right? Here's how you parent. Here's how you live your best life. Here's how you build your best business. Here's how you hang out with your kids. Here's how you exercise and cook and do all these things as a mom all in. And that's what the Moms All In brand is.
Nice.
We normally do a two-day conference. And since COVID, now we're doing a speaker series every Tuesday and Thursday up until March. We have a national expert come in and speak to our virtual audience.
Okay, cool. I love that. So I want to kind of get into the topic quickly, which is how to monetize your talent to live a life you love. I think you've written about that or spoken about that.
Wow, so Nikkei dropped some nuggets on this episode. Hey, take a screenshot, post it to your stories, letting me know what you learned in this episode. Make sure you tag me at Shalena Foltz on Instagram. And if you enjoy this episode, please give it 5 stars and leave a review. Don't be selfish. Share it with a friend. You never know who needs to hear it. Thank you for tuning into the Shalena Foltz Talk Show. And never forget, you're doing your best and your best is good enough.
Now, you might have 2 or 3 of those, right? But you know you meet people and when you meet them, you're like, dang, they're doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, right? Like exactly what you were put on the earth for, you're doing it. Whatever that is, that is what you should monetize. The beautiful part about this is, again, if you match that with the vision, right, you start with the end in mind, and you're intentional about the people you put around you to help you manifest that, you're intentional with the words that come out of your mouth, right, and you're speaking in the present. So if you want to be an actor, you don't want to be an actor, you are an actor. I'm an actor on a network TV show. If that's what you want to do, then that's what you should be telling yourself, right? And then you just have the action items to be able to pull that together. But it really works the best when it's what you're supposed to do, right? Some people want to act and that's not what they're supposed to do. They might be successful at it and they might be good at it, but it's not their purpose, it's not their passion. So there'll be a level of significance And that's why I use the word significance. There's one thing to be successful, and there's another thing to be significant. And when you are living your purpose, when you found a way to build a lifestyle of entrepreneurship around that purpose, so then you can make money off of it, you can now get to significance. And if I had to guess, I would say less than probably 0.3% of the world's population is living significant lives.
I like that. So basically, you should speak to yourself, speak to your future self in the present.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I was telling myself I had a media company before I ever owned a media company.
Right. So I know, like for me, I love to do vision boards, especially at the beginning of the year, and then just like writing out I really got into that last year, like write out like what I want. And it's crazy how you'll go back and you'll see things on your board and you'll be like,
that happened.
Sometimes you forget that you were putting
and you don't even realize it. Like, yeah. I mean, I woke up one day and I was like, holy crap, I own a media company.
Yeah.
Like, damn, I did that, you know?
Yes. Okay, so now you also have a new book called Raising Significance. Tell me all about it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked about it. It's right, Chia. So again, we talk about
it. I want to see the cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, an MTW guide, Raising Significance. Okay, nice. Mm-hmm.
So Raising Significance is basically 8 tenets to building or creating well-rounded, independent, and confident kids. And so it's just some very basic things that parents can do. And it works great too if you're an entrepreneurial parent, because you need your kids' help to fulfill some of these visions, right? But it's just things that you can do with your children and that you should do for yourself as well that will build significant children, right? As opposed to just game changers. You know, most people, when you think about building game changers as opposed to just contributing members of society, right? I think what happens as parents, do you have kids?
I do. I have 3. So
how old are your kids?
They're little. So my oldest.
Oh, that's right. I knew that. Yeah. You're on the mommy group.
2.5 and 4 months on the 3rd. So in a couple of days,
So what happens
now, so that's good.
Yeah, what'd you say?
They're all taking a nap right now.
Perfect. Yeah, you planned this perfectly. Yes. Right? But what happens is a lot of times as parents, especially when we get tired, you know, we think, oh my gosh, I'm just trying to raise this kid. I don't want him to come home with no babies. Don't get hooked on drugs. Stay out of jail. Like, okay. And that's good. And if I could get you through college, I've done my job and I'm done. Right.
Right.
And so this book is a shift on that it's not enough to raise contributing members of society. We have a world full of contributing members of society and we suck. The world is in shambles. Our nation is in shambles because we got successful people not worried about being significant. We got people that are fine with average. They're good with status quo. And so my thing is, let's just be intentional about raising a whole generation of people that think differently, that act differently, that believe that they could change the world and they could work collaboratively to do it.
Yeah.
That's what the book is about.
That's awesome. How old are your sons now? You have the oldest is 22.
And then I have a 14 and 11, no, 14, 12 and 9.
And how are you using them like in any of your businesses?
Yes.
How? Tell me how.
Yeah, that's one of the tenets of the book. So one of the tenets is bring them into your world. And you do that for 2 reasons. One, it's helpful. I mean, like they can do stuff, right? I mean, you know, the 4-year-old can like shred paper. Right? Mm-hmm. The 4-year-old can tear paper in half before you put it in the garbage can. And so that's helpful. But 2, it teaches them what you do. It gives them value. It gives them purpose. And the other thing I do too, Lena, is that I pay them, right? When they do things in my business, they invoice me.
Oh.
And now they write their own checks. You know, in fact, I came into my office this morning and my checkbook for one of my businesses was on my desk. And I'm like, now who in here is trying to write it? I'm like,
Well, you taught them well, Mom.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, your checkbook's out. All you have to do is write my, I'm like, okay. But anyway, yeah. So I use my kids now, and mind you now, they're older. My 9-year-old is still a baby, you know, so cute. But even as young as 4, 5, 6 years old, you find age appropriate tasks for them to do. For instance, I needed to do a budget for this business. I have a minority and an investment in this one business, and I needed to kind of throw some numbers together, and all I had was numbers. So I sent it to my 12-year-old, and I was like, put this in a spreadsheet, you know, and they're like, with what are you? I'm like, I don't care. Just figure it out. Put it in a spreadsheet. 3 different spreadsheets for these things. And like within 30 minutes, boom, I had a spreadsheet. I was writing a talk about significance, and I had the bullets for the talk like written on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. I gave that to my 14-year-old. And I was like, listen, just put this in a nice format in a Word document so I can at least follow the bullets in my talk. He literally had half direction. And again, within 30, 45 minutes, you know, I get a shared document. I have them write emails, draft emails sometimes. I have them do research, right? If I need to look things up on Google, find a business that does this, they do it. I have them do spreadsheets, like I said, budgets. When I have to pay my salespeople, I give them, I send them all the numbers. I'm like, put this in a spreadsheet for me. Like I said, my 9-year-old, shredding papers, organizing stuff, writing on the blackboard. I'll say, look, write these goals on the blackboard for me. I mean, you know,
yeah,
all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, because I saw that you can pay your child, like if you hire them, you can pay them like maybe up to like $12,000 a year or something.
Yeah, like they have, I think they have to be like 11. Check with your tax professional. I always put that. I'm not a perfect parent, and check with your tax professional. But yeah, I think my advisor told me, he like at 11, you can actually put them down as in, you know, so yeah, I do. I like write those little suckers off.
Okay. So this has been a great conversation. I want to know what your favorite quote is or the motto that you live by.
So my favorite quote, and this is going to sound self-serving, but it is because it works. My favorite quote right now is, I am the best at what I do. Nobody does what I do better than me. And it's my quote. I write it down. I actually had somebody buy me a pen, and that it was engraved on the pen. I start my talks off with that for people that if I'm training people to be speakers, when I work one-on-one with entrepreneurs, I start everybody off on that quote. You're the best at what you do. Nobody does what you do better than you. But if you don't believe it, nobody else will, right?
Right.
So that's a huge, I love that quote. I also love the quote. I can't remember who said it, a famous Black woman. Oh my gosh, it's escaping me. But basically, you know, if they don't give you a seat at the table, create your own table. Yeah. I'm an owner. I live in an ownership mentality, right? I'll give you an opportunity to give it to me. If you don't want to give it to me,
fine.
Don't let me figure it out. If I figure it out, it's over. If I figure out how to do what I ask you to do, it's over. Right. And so I just believe everybody has an opportunity to create their own table, make their own chairs. And the beautiful thing when you do that is you get to invite who comes to your table. Right.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Mottos. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, motto.
I think that's a motto to live by. Definitely. Especially if you don't see at the table.
Yeah. I love that quote. It's escaping me who said it, but there's so many profound quotes and so many, you know, wonderful, you know, legends have said some of the most amazing things, but you know, I like my quote.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. That was really good information. So I imagine do you work with a specific type of entrepreneur?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I'm really not doing much one-on-one coaching right now, entrepreneurially. I have two focuses this year, right? And that's really just to grow my media company and sell books. And so the one on, we were heavy one-on-one coaching last year because of COVID and all of that stuff. So we will work with entrepreneurs, but it's really on a case by case basis. And it's, you know, yeah. Okay. We're not doing, I'm just not doing as much of it right now, but if the right person reaches out to me and they are, you know, ready to go and they're game ready, and I can see that it'd be worth my time to spend with them, then I'm game for it. And that really would be probably a woman who's a mom, who is in business, has started a business already, and just needs a reset and somebody to come in and look and fill gaps and get them back out into the playing field.
Right. So how can the audience get in touch? Where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on just about everything at Michelle Taylor Willis. Clubhouse, Michelle T. Willis. Clubhouse and Twitter is Michelle T. Willis. And then my website is michelletaylorwillis.com. If you'd like to buy my book, you can do that at my website. You can go directly to my author page, author michelletaylorwillis.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, take a screenshot, tag Shalana Fultz on Instagram, and let me know what your favorite part was. And never forget, you're doing your best, and your best is good enough. I'll see you next week, same time, same place.